Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 150. Normally, we would be popping champagne bottles and all that, but unfortunately, we're not together today. So this will be a bit of a standard, quick, over-the-internet type episode, and I think hopefully we'll be able to properly celebrate it when we're all back together. But there is still a lot for us to cover. We'll be checking in from all our different locations, lots of racing going on in this little window. So lots of exciting stuff to get to. But before we do get into the main stuff, we do have a couple of quick bean shout outs. I'll go first because this is super overdue. This is from Luzerne, from Oscar, from Term Cafe. I assume it's from a town called Schwaffenhausen, which I mean, I'm not known for my pronunciation. I think that's a Swiss town, I'm going to assume. Could be German, sounds very German. But he does say in his lovely note to us that Thursdays is his favorite day of the week, thanks to us. So thank you very much for the beans and the kind message, Oscar. We do appreciate it a lot. And then Ollie also has one coming from Switzerland.
Yes, I got one in Lausanne. Shout out to Griffin, Cam, and Ivan, who addressed it to Coffee Club International. And these are like Tanzania, but it's been crossed out. I don't know if I can get my camera there, but it's been crossed out. It says Columbia Light.
That's confusing.
Yeah, from that's the Roasted Boon, distributed in Washington, D.C. So all the way from Washington to Lausanne to my hands. Thank you so much to Griffin, Cam, and Ivan. They think that we're funny and and that we have good grit and determination. And but we really appreciate actually, it's a really cool card as well. It's like it's from Lausanne. It's like a little Olympic postcard.
Oh, sweet.
So we'll put that in the studio. But shout out to those boys. These beans actually look really good and they smell very good too. So excited to try them. Thanks, guys.
Amazing. Amazing. So we'll start off with a little check-in just so everyone can get situated. And I think we're going to have to start with George. George, where are you and what are you doing? You look like you're in full vacation mode right now.
I'm staying very sun smart with my paper hat right now. And it was slightly cloudy before, so I'm not sure if I'm going to regret sitting out in the sun. I might move halfway through the pod, but I guess I'll do a little. Oh, let's do it just a little. I didn't even show you guys before. But this is what we're working with.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
I don't even know what I'm. I can't see the screen. I don't know what I'm showing, but it's quite a nice beautiful view of the coast. Currently in Sardinia, as of last night, and so don't have much to share about it yet. I've been eating a pizza, pistachio gelato, and had an espresso, and went to a couple of beaches, but we're not even 24 hours in. So, not too much to share on that. But I wish I had a bean, don't have a bean shout out, but I do have had my best coffee in the European trip so far, like including since the Diamond League 6 weeks ago. But actually, just Porto in general, I was already telling you guys, but that was easily the best coffee of the trip there. But Hakko Coffee Roastery was freaking amazing. And I got a couple of coffee recommendations from Carlos, from Verb. Do you guys know he's Portuguese? And there's great coffee there. So if anyone wants to go on a coffee trip, I would definitely recommend Portugal. But had a nice week there, and now we're back in Italy for a week. And excited to explore the island. We got this sweet, we booked this really cheap rental car, but then all rental cars in Europe are pretty much manuals. That's just like, unless you want to pay a lot more. So that's just kind of the deal. And then when we get there, they're like, do you drive automatic? Like, yeah. I mean, I drive automatic. I don't know if anyone doesn't know how to drive an automatic. So we just somehow ended up with not a manual, which was a nice treat. And then we come out and it's like it's got like a full carbon fiber dashboard. It's like this little Peugeot, like GT, like hatchback thing. And it kind of rips. So that's been really fun around these extremely windy roads. But if anyone has any Sardinia recommendations, I'd happily take them if anyone wants to send them. And actually on that, thank you everyone for your really kind words from last week's Olympic recap. Obviously, that was like one of our more serious podcasts and a little more emotional, but thank you everyone for some really nice messages after that episode. So, and I'm sure we all appreciate them very much. And should I do a gooch? Should I do a gooch update?
Yeah. Yeah. How are you doing? How's the body?
The body's actually, it's going, the recovery is a little slower than I probably would have liked. Not that I'm in any kind of rush, and I'm not overly worried about it. Like, this is a really nice time to have an extended break, and I haven't had one in a few years, and hopefully, you know, I won't have another one in as long as we can make it. I'm not too worried about the delay, but yeah, still feeling the gooch doing anything other than walking, which is kind of what I was saying, which kind of where we were at last week. Like, I think the thing with like with a bone injury where a muscle attaches, which is similar to these guys who had the front of the pelvis one, where your abs and adductors attach, it basically like shuts off those muscles, like, because it's like trying to protect the area. So, and because your adductors attached there, it just like won't let your adductors contract, and so you have like no strength there. Is that right? Is that what you guys were felt with that one?
Yeah, that's what I had. Yeah,
but and so similarly with the one in my sit bone, which is where the adductor also attaches back there, and my hamstring, and kind of the hip flexor goes through it. Like, I still, like, I can't contract any of those muscles, which is kind of annoying. Like, it. Like, there's just still like the pain response there. So I can't do anything. Like, I would like to be doing some kind of loading of the tissue, kind of getting some lifting in, or like before I can start running. But like, I literally just can't load the area at all. I can't contract my hamstring, can't contract my adductor at all, which is, yeah, a little bit annoying. And just, I think 3 weeks today. So I guess not that long in the scheme of things, but longer than I've taken off for a few years. So a bit of a waiting game to get to a point where I can do something other than like walking is still pain free, but yeah, like the main test I have as well is just like being able to put on a pair of shorts standing up, and, we're still not at that stage, which is also really annoying. And yeah, I'm not sure if it's just because, I don't know, maybe it's just one of those ones that takes a while to heal, or, you know, running through it for 2 months maybe made it slightly worse than it would have been, which I take full responsibility for, and still feel good about that decision. And yeah, we're in Sardinia. I don't know if probably people have heard of, but maybe like it's not always on people's radars, but it's like one of those blue zones in the world, you know, where people live like longer than anywhere else in the world. It's like Sardinia. Mm-hmm. There's like Costa Rica, like someplace in California, and
Japan.
Okinawa Islands in Japan. So maybe I should go figure out. That's probably like, that means it must be healthy. Like, this must be a good place to do some like healing rehabilitation, because people just
hang out with the locals.
Yeah, everyone lives to like 100 here,
so yeah, they're probably all 90 years old.
They're doing something right. And yeah, that's the George Gooch watch. I think someone hashtag Gooch that in the YouTube comments. That's a good one.
I like Gooch Watch.
Yeah. Gooch Watch still, yeah. Hopefully I'll have some better news next week, but if not, I'm honestly not It's gonna take as long as it takes. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're in the best place to heal. And I think just like being able to relax and not stress about it is like literally the best thing you can do for the, both the mind and the body. So hopefully you can just continue to enjoy it, and it'll, before you know it, you'll wake up one day and you'll be putting your shorts on pain-free.
So that'd be huge. You take that for granted. You really take that one for granted.
You really do. You really do. While you were talking, George, I just realized probably the first thing that we should have addressed in this podcast was that Gus is back. So I can't believe we didn't address that straight away. He's just there chilling. Ollie.
Yeah. How's
Gus doing? What's the Gus update?
The Gus update is, well, he's doing great at the moment. He's actually mellowed out, I think, after being CEO of the podcast for a few years now. He's starting to mature, and he's definitely just a bit more chill and relaxed. As you guys can see to my left, he is doing what he usually does on the podcast, which he has done the past few years, which is just put his head in the back of the seat, make sure he's listening, and yeah, he's back. He's thought he would check in on us, see how we're all doing. Yeah, he's missing you boys and hoping you guys are doing well. So I don't know if I can turn the chair. See if I can turn the chair without him just freaking out.
No, he's more of an advisory role these days.
Yeah, there we go. So fair people can see on YouTube. There he is.
Oh, Gus.
Say hello, Gus. There we go.
Was he happy to see you?
Yeah, he gave a few wiggles. I thought he was going to be like, yeah, he's going to think, oh god, this guy's back. Fuck this guy, you know. But no, he gave me a few wiggles, and then usually sometimes he does the first day of like just ignoring that you're there, shunning you.
He sulks for a day to let you know that he was pissed about you leaving.
Yeah, pretty much. But no, he cuddled up next to me, and yeah, he's pretty excited that I'm back. He's currently, I woke him up pretty early this morning, so he's a bit annoyed about that. But yeah, in general, he's doing well. It's funny because I like today, like I have to go to practice pretty soon. But I went to get coffee pretty early in the morning. And it's funny now these days because I have the jet lag, I'm up early. I'll walk and grab coffees. Gus is still asleep, you know, in his little bed. He doesn't even move. He's like not a morning person. So yeah.
He's just getting that beauty sleep.
Yeah, he's doing well. He's happy to be back. He's happy to be back.
Well, it's sweet that you're finally able to be back in Boulder with him after being away for so long. But I guess we should take a little step back, because last week when we recorded, well, I suppose when the episode came out, you raced on that same day over in Lausanne. You want to kind of give a rundown of like the Lausanne experience?
Yeah, one of the best races of my career. Lausanne, honestly, yeah, it was a difficult time period for me because I'm trying to flip the switch a little bit after, you know, disappointing Olympics and like mentally in a pretty low point. Everything else though has been super positive. I mean, support from everyone and just in general, just being around great people. Like I got to room with the man, the myth, the legend, Stewie McSwain, which was always fun. And I got to see a lot of other people like Hobbs and Bryce and a lot of my mates through the circuit. It was great to like hang out with them, grab coffee in Lausanne. Like Lausanne's just like beautiful there. So it was really, really nice and good vibes, 100%. But the mental anguish is usually just coming from my own performances. So, mentally just was at not a great level of confidence. But I thought, you know, I could turn this around, flip this around. And to be honest, like leading up to the race, all I'm thinking about is pretty much like, I can't wait to go back to Boulder. I can't wait to go home and reset and not carry around 600 bags and just kind of like, you know, get back to my dog and my girlfriend and like all the stuff and I have here in Colorado. So that's not a great mindset to have when you're lining up in such a talented field. But that was just the where my head was at. And, pre-meet was good. Everything felt okay. I mean, my calves are really, really kind of jammed up a little bit, and I've been having some issues with my Achilles and my knee. And I think that's just from the travel as well as like in Monaco when I got kind of nicked there. I just saw Kyle yesterday and I've got a bit of, I don't know if it's tendonitis or something like that, but like it's just irritated the tendon where I've been nicked. So it's just got to be monitored. It should be fine to finish off the rest of the season, but just to make sure I go do some exercise, I've got to use Jordy's little toe pad thing, whatever the fuck that thing's called. I got to use that thing and I'm going to use a lot of stuff on the Mobo just to keep things like to load that area from pretty much what Kyle said. But in the race, like I thought, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll go out and just try and compete there. And that's two from two with Lausanne races, both shocking races in my career. I had an IT band issue going into Lausanne after Commonwealth Games. Actually after a really high point. And I think I came like second last again and ran 3:38 or something like that. Whereas this time around, I also came second last and ran 3:36. So, yeah, it wasn't the ideal race for me, but I think stepping back from it, I'm not shocked that I didn't race as well. I think I was just in a position where like I need to get back, refresh a little bit, you know, get my head kind of mentally clear. And I was fortunate enough that Kelsey was there, so I was pretty happy with that. And sorry, there's a truck that's reversing right out front of my place, so there's a bit of a noise, so I apologize for that, guys. But yeah, it was nice to have her and the support there, and I had a good long chat with Dathan. And we just kind of just went through like, yeah, I'm a bit hypercritical the past few races, and I just have to keep trying to look at the positives that I've come from this season. So I mean, yeah, like I've started training and getting back into it in February, and it's now near the end of August, and I'm in a great position to run nice and quick, hopefully to finish off these last two races with Zurich and Brussels. And the nice thing is Yara's going to be at those races too, so I have a friend there, and he's always good vibes, you know. So yeah, Lausanne wasn't a great race for me, and I was very, very hard on myself after the race, feeling pretty shit, honestly, about like where I'm at. But I'm very, very thankful for the support I have, because it's just kind of realigns what I need to value as a runner. Because, you know, I think personally it's more of a journey of just not necessarily always having to be the best or be the top three or be a great race. It's more about like just being able to say like, hey, you're back racing, you're back competing with these guys, and you got to take those experiences and, you know, cultivate them into better ones for the next race. So now I'm back in Boulder. I did a workout with Yarrod yesterday. I was super jet lagged. It was pretty fun. It was a classic Yarrod where we'd have all the splits out and then he'd run like way too quick, slow down, and then way too quick again and then slow down. So we were doing a lot of those kind of back and forth yo-yoing reps, but it was good to have him in my corner with it all. And yeah, it's nice to be back in Boulder, back with Gus. Yeah, that's pretty much the update. Not much else happening for me other than I'll be going back to Zurich with Europe with these boys, be back in that area of the world on the 2nd, leading into Zurich and then Brussels. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And was there Gus any, is – yeah, go.
Was there any part of you that thought you should go back to Boulder before Lausanne? Like was
– Yeah.
Or you just
yeah. – I think, to be honest, I think Lausanne is one of those. I actually had a good coffee with my agent Ray, because we talked about just kind of that pattern, and there was a couple of things that I've learned about myself with it. And I think number one, I have to realize that like some people can just do the whole Europe trip. Some people can just be like in Europe, live out of a bag, do it really well, and just continue to progress really well. And then some people might need to take a little couple breaks, just depending on the type of person you are. You shouldn't be ashamed of thinking like, oh, I want to go back or I want to stay in Europe. Like I kind of felt like, oh no, I'm in Europe. I should stay in Europe. I also think that the week leading into Lausanne with my family, and I love them to death, and I would never trade that week for anything, but it wasn't the best lead up leading into a Diamond League. Like I didn't get in good running. There was no good running areas. I was in a car driving around for 90% of the day. So my legs were all jammed up. And I just wasn't like, it wasn't a focused lead up to a very serious race. Like that's just reality of it. But do I get that opportunity or time with my family? Not much, like very rarely. But I was already confirmed for Lausanne. My family had booked this trip a year in advance because they don't have the luxury that we have of just being able to go back and forth of places, you know, more freely. So for me, it's like, no, they didn't. No, well, they didn't. They booked it so early in advance. They didn't know I was going to run in Lausanne. So they kind of left a couple of days before, which I'm glad they did because I didn't want them to come see that race. I had a feeling that I wasn't going to race too well just off the back of being in Italy and being in a place where the running's not great and not in the mindset of like, okay, focusing on Lausanne. It was more of like focusing on my family and just having a good time there with them. I think that personally, like the Europe trip was long, but it's not Dathan or it's not my agent really. It's me that needs to make those decisions of like, okay, I need to set my schedule out and plan it so I can optimize where I'm happy with in the area, whether it's Europe or Boulder, and what races I know I can really focus on and compete in. Obviously, you don't want to take away opportunities like competing at Diamond Leagues, but also you don't want to be in a position where like you race a Diamond League and you're like, shit, that was a really bad race. I probably should have adjusted how I approached it. And that's kind of where I had a really good conversation with a few people. And next time it's like more about, okay, how does Ollie like, you know, really put himself in a good position to compete at these races. And maybe it means I come home back to Colorado for a couple of weeks straight after the Olympics. And I plan things out a lot better in line with my family or my girlfriend or whatever, you know, that's just something that I have to take accountability for and I need to be better with. So it's a good thing to learn now. And, you know, next season's going to be a lot longer and a lot more planned out. So I'm hoping that I can be better with it. So, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully that will be – I mean, it should just be easier from now on in terms of world champs always finishing the season. Like you don't have to go through this phase of like trying to decide where to be or whether to keep running or not. And honestly, that's like actually like not a bad topic to just touch on, like having just seen a few people in their seasons early in the last couple of days, like Grant Fisher, I assume he was planning on going to the rest of the season, and shout out to the flying Kiwi, Hamish, who won the Olympics in the high jump. I know he was planning on going all the way to the Diamond League final, but has decided after, was it after Lausanne? Was he there, Ollie? Maybe it was after Poland, whichever one he just went to.
Yeah, he wasn't in Lausanne.
Has also decided to head home instead. Like, how do you guys, I don't know. Like, it was easy for me to approach that decision because I just literally had no choice. Like, it's like, right, I have to go on break. Like, I don't know. How did you feel about that more this year? Like, whether or not to, like, how to approach coming off it?
It's funny you asked me that question because I literally had like multiple days where I was like, I really want to end my season right now when I was sick, you know. I think all of us would agree. I mean, anyone just like, it's just logical, would agree that it's just stupid to not have the biggest race at the end of the season. Like that just doesn't make any sense. So the fact that as it stands right now, that's not the way it works is really what like introduces, I think, all these like, yeah, weird situations that we have right now where everyone knows that the point of the season or the main goal for everyone was the Olympics. So everyone tried to peak at the Olympics. And now it's a question of, who's like able physically and mentally to keep chugging along for this last final month. And you don't know how you're going to pull up from the Olympics. Like this stuff you can't plan for. You can't plan out that far in advance if injuries or sicknesses are going to come up. And I think you can always push through it for the Olympics because it's the Olympics, or similarly for the world champs, like you can push through it for that. But then after that is when things can fall apart. So if anyone ever wants to end their season post Olympics, but with racing left, I would always support them because I know how hard it can be to keep going. And that I know that by the time you get to the line on the Olympics, the reality is 90% of athletes are dealing with stuff. You know what I mean? Like everyone out there is probably dealing with something, like whether it's physical or mental. So to keep going beyond that is really tough. And I think it'll be so much better when the big meets are at the end. So, or the biggest meet is at the end. So I definitely understand people ending their seasons. And I think linking that to Ollie's situation, it is really hard to adjust, to properly like plan and adjust like this period specifically. So I understand like how you can find yourself in a situation where you end up on a start line and you're racing against the best guys in the world and you're like, shit, I'm not like feeling 100% there. And you just got to do it. And you just got to try and make the most of it because you never really know exactly. But yeah, I've, since the last podcast or even I guess before it, like I've been dealing with the sickness. And yeah, once you've made it through the Olympics, it is mentally like so much harder to I think like go through that stuff when like you could just, when there's a lot of uncertainty and you could just be like, oh, I could just, you know, I could just rest and get ready for next year. So
100%.
I had that conversation with Dathan. Like that was pretty much after Lausanne, I called him. I was pretty angry at myself and I was like, fuck, I should end the season. Like this is embarrassing. Like I can't. But then Dathan kind of told me, he's like, do you want to end the season? Like, are you happy? Like he said, I fully support you end the season, but are you happy with ending it now? And then I kind of looked back and I was like, well, no, I want to finish it better. And he's like, I want to, you know, I'll finish it in a better way. And I feel like I've got more to give. And he's like, well, then we just need to come home and reset. So sometimes you just like having that conversation, I think is important as well to figure out where you're at. Cause sometimes you can like eat, like pretty much said, like just sit on it, just give it a day. Don't make a decision yet. And then we can talk about it later. And I'm glad that that happened. Cause then you can kind of reset and feel like, am I just pissed off about this race or do I actually need to be like, okay, I'm kind of like done. I need to take a step away. So yeah, no, yeah. I definitely think it's important.
I feel like for you, like if mentally you felt like you really didn't want to race again and you wanted to end your season, like that's like 100% understandable. But if you still have that feeling that you want to keep racing, then it's like, yeah, you come back and reset, even though it's not probably for as long as you would like. I think just finally being home after so long and like sleeping in your own bed and being in your own setup and just training back in our usual training setup, I think that stuff can be really rejuvenating and good. And like, I mean, it's mostly, as long as physically you're there, I feel like it's like just about being happy and enjoying it more than anything else, like these final races. I think that's the most important thing. And that's probably what will lead to good results, I guess.
Yeah, that's the plan.
So, yeah, those are the thoughts on that. And I guess, I mean, Lausanne was a pretty sick meet. I'm really impressed at the 800 meter guys, how like all the, this must be the most times that I don't know how many sub 143 guys there are racing each other every single 800 meter race now, but it's just absolutely bonkers. That was, I think, a highlight for me, just seeing Wanyoni get another big dub. And we had Elise break the US record in the outdoor 3K, 825, I think it was. Did you guys see Nia wearing, did you guys see Nia not wearing the Brooks kit at the meet in the 800?
Yeah, there's been a bit of drama.
Do we have it inside? She was wearing like a blacked out kit, like not Brooks. Do we have some inside scoop on that, Ollie?
Yeah, from what I've heard, she's left Brooks Beast and she's currently been sought after by other companies. I don't know if
she's pretty good.
Yeah, she's pretty good. And I think, I don't know if it's an issue with Danny or if it's an issue with just like she's not happy with the situation, but it seems like there's apparently been, from what I've heard in the little bubble, there's been a little bit of drama with it. So hopefully she can figure it out because she's obviously so talented and you obviously want to be in the best possible place when you're an athlete to progress, and maybe she's just not feeling like she's in that place. But yeah, I haven't heard. I mean, maybe she's joining another team, or maybe she's left with Brooks B, so she's not with Danny anymore. But for me, it's interesting with Danny Mackey because right now he's always only really had one really standout guy, right? With Josh, he's never had any kind of other guys come through as much as you'd expect it to, particularly with how talented and how well Josh is doing. So I wonder, I thought for Nia, I thought it would be like a similar thing. Maybe she was just going to be that one gal that just crushing it and getting that good Danny Mackey time. But I don't know why she's left now. But Yeah, it seems like from what I've heard, there's been a bit of stuff going on. So hopefully, I'm wishing hopefully all the best to her that she can figure it out and put herself in the best possible position. But it is interesting seeing that kind of stuff. And I'm just wondering if she's going to stay with Brooks or not. She might join Kiprun and then have a start at Kiprun team coached by Sean Bronson. Who knows?
Why not? Have you seen?
Why not?
Yeah, the Brooks team has always been interesting. A lot of talent there. I guess the other one who's been running really well is Brandon Miller, right?
Brandon Miller. He's with Brooks now from Nike, yeah.
He's been running really well. But it's just kind of weird when you know, you flip on the race and then you see Nia and like she's wearing like, you know, not a Brooks kit and you're like, what's going on here? And then I don't know. I think other people had actually caught on to it quicker because I messaged Tom about it and apparently she pulled the classic move of unfollowing Brooks on Instagram like a while ago or like a week ago and people had noticed that. So people had already seen like some stuff happening, but it's always interesting.
You would only do that if you wanted to stir something up.
isn't that a crazy move?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, her contract, you would assume, goes through the rest of this year still. So, but she's not going to be getting paid if she's not racing in a Brooks kit, I would think. But so there must be some actual decent drama going on there. I'm not sure, though. I'm not sure. But moving on to just a few days later, there was the Silesia Diamond League meet over in Poland. And I think, I mean, no question for us what the race of the meet was, with Jakob setting the world record in the 3K of 7:17, taking about 3 seconds off it. And I think I probably speak for all of us when I say, growing up looking at the 3K record, that was always the record that was, to me, the most mind-boggling mid-distance to distance record. I was thinking my whole life, no one's ever going to break it. And then he absolutely demolishes it. And I think, what can you do apart from just let your jaw drop and just applaud how good he is at running specifically? I think 3K is probably almost his perfect distance, but I think he could set a 5K world record as well.
I see no reason why he can't run 60s for 5K if he can run 7:17, which doesn't, like what Clicker said in the group chat, it literally doesn't sound like a running time. Like, you tell someone you're in 7:17 and be like, what
distance?
What event is that? Like, what event can you run 7 minutes and 17 seconds for? That's just,
yeah.
And someone else was saying he closed the last 1500 in 3:36, which is 1500 that used to, like, that would have qualified for the Olympics, like, 2 Olympics ago in the 1500. Yeah. And he's just closing races in that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just amazing to see. It looks so smooth. I would be so nervous being a pacemaker in a race like that. Like, you have to run so fast. It was, I can't remember the first pacemaker's name, but it was Vincent Ciardi. I think he had to take him through in 3:56 at the mile or something like that. It's just having to think that you have to go to the front and do that is so intimidating. And then Jakob picks it up from there.
Did Jingy really say that he'd three down, seven to go, or whatever that quote was?
I think he did.
Did you guys see that in World Records? Which was like,
I saw Sidious posted or something. Yeah.
Yeah, was that a real quote? I didn't actually see it. It's like 1500 to marathon.
He has said in past interviews that he wants to break every record from the 1500 up to the marathon. He has said that in past interviews.
Yeah, so last maybe year he did say that. And he said the 1500 was going to be the hardest. He said he said if he can get the 1500, every other one would be like much easier. So
I can't wait to see him in the steeple again.
I would think he would run a pretty crazy steeple. If he can run 7:17.
I just think it wouldn't even, like, it would just, the running part would just be so easy for him that it's just no problem, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yo, how much do we think Corus is paying him that he rocks the watch every single race? That's crazy to me.
I'm hoping they're paying him a shit ton. I hope he's getting so much money from them, because that does not seem like it'd be convenient. Yeah, just, it better be good money.
The world record and the prize money that day was 60 grand, let alone what he makes from Nike for a world record. Like, Corus better be something in those numbers, otherwise it's a waste of time.
I also love how they, I mean, 100%, if you're Chorus, you have to do this, but they try to go back and like give some data on the race, but none of the data they give is ever like relevant at all. It's like telling us his stride length and stuff. It's like, that's got nothing to do with like him running 7:17. It doesn't tell you anything at all.
What are we going to do with that information? Go try and replicate it? Go measure out like our stride length or something?
But it's doing nothing. To trying to cash in on it. It was, I mean, it was a wild 3K. I think, I mean, any 3K where someone runs 7:17 is going to be absolute carnage at the back, depending if people are trying to go with it. And I think we did see a bit of this in Slesia because it was an absolutely crazy talented field. And we saw Aragawi running 7:21 to me was ridiculous as well. How Ethiopia didn't have that guy run the 5K as well at the Olympics is such a travesty to me because he was only in the 10K at the Olympics. So that was amazing to me as well. And then, I mean, some other pretty good performances, but then a few people at the back, as we talked about earlier, Grant decided to end his season after it, probably just a bit tired as well. So makes sense. I didn't actually watch the video of the steeplechase apart from just the finish. Did either of you two watch it? Because I didn't realize that Rooks fell over and Kenneth Rooks fell over and fractured his clavicle.
I did not see it.
Yeah.
That's actually crazy.
I assumed there was a reason he ran 8:35.
Yeah.
And not 8:06 or 8:04, whatever the winner ran. In the water or on a normal barrier?
I didn't even see it. I just saw a video of him coming home today posted by Ed Eystone, and he had it in a sling.
Damn.
His arm.
That's just your collarbone, right? Is that what a club?
I think so.
Is that just like breaking your collarbone?
Yeah.
I think it is.
I'm pretty sure.
Steve was wild like that. What I did see was that the Kenyan guy who came second but tied, like they had to go to the 1,000th to decide it. He also lost the Paris Diamond League tying to the 100th and heading to go to the 1,000th. Like he's tied. Yeah. Two Diamond Leagues in a row and lost both of them to the 1,000th. So that's got to,
he's going to get one eventually.
You think so? That's the guy who went around the water jump at the Olympics and got put through to the final. I don't know if we ever touched on that, but that was ridiculous. Did you guys see that?
I didn't understand it.
I don't understand how he just went to the inside of the water jump and then he came back around and went over it and then complained about it and got put through. There must be more to
someone must have impeded him, I guess, or something.
But that's like the water, that's how the water jump is, like every single time. Like you just got to figure it out.
that's true. But yeah, that was a crazy race. El Broccoli somehow getting the dub
still
once again. And I'm a bit conscious of time here because I think Ollie has training in approximately 9 minutes. So
yeah, I'm not making practice on time.
We'll speed run the rest of this episode.
Shout out to Dathan for changing the recovery day for 10 miles and a lift from thinking, oh, it's going to be at 9:30, pretty chill. No, 8:30.
Yeah.
8:30.
Early bird gets the worm.
I got business to work out with the boys. I can't, you know. Business comes first. Anyway, sorry.
But I am pleased to announce that I was accepted into the Rome Diamond League, and I'm really excited to go race it. Even though I am a bit intimidated by it, I do have to admit. I look at the start list and it's all like a lot of like the really, really good guys, which is what I want to be. I want to be in those types of races because I know you have to be in them to run well. In terms of like the sickness stuff, I think I should be fine. I mean, I was talking to Ollie before the podcast and I was telling him how I was pretty stressed out when I was sick and I didn't know what race I was going to do. But as soon as I did get into the race, I'm just of the mindset. It's like, I think I'll be fine racing. And we'll see. I'm just going to go for it and give it my best. And I mean, that's all you can really do, I guess. So you never really know exactly how a sickness is going to affect you when it comes to this type of stuff. But I'm optimistic that I'll be able to go out there and give it my best effort. And I'm definitely just going to just race my little booty off and see what happens. See if it turns out to be a 12:40 race or whatever with those guys at the front. I have no idea what the pacing or anything like that is meant to be, but I'm just very excited to have another opportunity to be in like a really good 5K for this season, because, you know, they're kind of few and far between at this point. So yeah,
nothing to lose.
That's it, I guess. Nothing to lose, really. Nothing to lose. Oh, I wish we had more time to talk about Mike Smith.
We can touch on it quickly.
We'll just tease it.
I'm going to be late anyway. Fuck it.
Yeah. So, George, do you want to do the honors?
Yeah, George, this is something that you should probably talk about.
Yeah, all right. I think it's your.
It is. Obviously, there's. I'm sure like half the people listening have like maybe they're in enough running circles, or like maybe there are some Let's Run boards. I don't know. That there's
no. It's public knowledge.
I know, but like before, like yesterday, whenever that was, that they may have already heard swirlings of a Mike Smith announcement of some kind, and at least we have over the summer. I feel like, if not even, I know there's been talk of Mike Smith and like doing things with people for like with brands for a long time, but
I they all want him.
They all want him, basically. That's what it boils down to. Is, and especially the big brands, they want him not to be coaching a small college team. Instead, they want some coaching some pros. But I was not expecting the announcement this week. But with not immediate effect, with 1 year effect, Mike Smith leaving NAU at the end of 2025 track season and handing over the reins to this associate head coach Jared Cornfield, which is cool for me because he and I started at NAU the same semester. Like when I joined the team, he came on as a GA, like grad assistant, for however long grad assistant, like 2 years, and then he became the assistant coach for like 6 years or something, and then he's been associate head coach for like a year, and then as of next year he'll take over as director, which is
that's just cool.
Incredible. And as Elise Craney's coach, if that wasn't obvious to people listening. But huge news.
This is like the biggest thing to happen for like Nike pro running. Like literally this is what they needed. You know what I mean? This is gonna save them. I think like obviously so many people are gonna want to be coached by him, and it makes sense for a brand like that to have a really good team in Flagstaff with this guy at the helm. So this is something that I think everyone knows is going to shake things up a lot. I mean, some things are going to stay the same because he already coaches half of the best runners in America. But it's just going to make things even more, I don't know, dominant. And I'm happy for him because, you know, he deserves everything with, you know, everything that he's done and the college scene to be able to go and do a pro. I think that's most coaches like end goals, and now he's able to do it, and I know he's going to be looked after really well and all that. So shout out to Mike Smith.
It's kind of when we thought Mike Smith was going to coach at NAU forever, like that was his like destiny, but then he had a child and it feels like he realized how intensive college coaching is and how much more time he will have with his family as a pro coach. Is I think I'm not sure what percentage, some percentage of it, I feel like, is that. Having a kid, you're like, holy shit, college coaching is like such a huge investment time. Not that pro coaching isn't, but college coaching is just crazy. I feel like hours.
You have to deal with so much more stuff that's like not coaching.
Yeah. And especially as the director too.
Yeah. So
I have an interesting question though, just to obviously, I'm sure it's probably been sorted out by whatever deal he's made. But Mike Smith Collective, not a group, before this news came out, they're all from different brands. I wonder how that's going to change leading into this announcement. Like a lot of them compete for competing brands. So I wonder if there's going to be like a little deal that Smithy made to try and get them all signed into the same company that he'll be coaching. Because, you know, you want to keep the athletes he's got. I'm sure he wants to keep all those talented people in his collective, which will transition into a pro team. But, yeah, they're all from different brands. So I wonder how that's going to go down. like, you know, Luis, it's already, Nicky.
It's already public that he.
Oh, really?
That he's, and because George, I think, has given us some of the intel or like whoever, and we had heard whispers that Luis was allowed to stay with him, but now it's public that he said that every single athlete that he already coaches as a pro is allowed to stay with him. That's what they're saying. So that's huge.
I'm surprised that that the case.
Does that include Nico? Because Nico was a, I mean, I guess he's been pro for like a month.
But so I've heard Nico's from what moving. Woody told me, from what Woody told me, he's allowed to coach everyone. Everyone that he coaches right now, he can continue to coach in a year.
But then how does that work for like him being a pro? Because how's that going to work?
I mean, that's how much the brand wanted him. You know what I mean? That's how bad they wanted him.
But the brand has to sign more people for him to coach, correct? That's under that brand. Right now, like he's got a lot of athletes. Like he's probably only going to add a couple more that are going to be actually under the team. Surely.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird though. Personally,
what's interesting will be the allocation of resources towards the people with, because the funding we assume will be infinity. And so maybe there's just so much funding that they don't even care if some of it like falls down to people not with the brand. But otherwise, like, sure, are they just going to have to always split like from things funded by, I don't know.
We can say the brand's Nike. We can just say the brand's Nike because we know it's Nike. No. So Nike are going to be funding it, but are they going to fund people like Luis or Nicky who are with
it's brand? Also, this is like a short-term problem and they're probably looking at it as a long-term thing. I mean, he's only 44. Yeah, he could be coaching this pro team for the next 40 years, you know, literally. So I think they probably
so just deal it with worth it. They'll deal with it for the entire – Nico is – Nico might run for 15 years though.
This is true. I wouldn't be surprised if they wouldn't let them sign a new contract or something. They would try really hard in the next contract to get them to be part of it because that would just make sense.
But yeah, either kick them out or sign them on.
Yeah. So, but either way, I think it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be exciting just to have, I think, another really good competitive pro team in America because as we have well documented, Nike has been struggling a bit in the pro team department these last few years. So I think, I mean, obviously we want On to always be on top and be the best at everything, but we're not, we still, you know, we want the sport to thrive in all the different ways. And I think, you know, this is how it thrives is having all these different good teams, good options, good coaches. So it's a big win for the sport, I would say.
And other good teams lift the bar and then we have to, you know, either match it or go above that again. So other good people make us better.
Yeah.
So I'm all for it. And even if they're the
more
bad
Mike Smith
now.
In our lives.
Even if Mike Smith's now the bad guy.
Oh, amazing. Well, we should probably wrap up, huh?
It's 8:30, so.
Well, just a bit of a quick one, but.
It's traffic. Or just say there was traffic on Diagonal.
I just said same. Dathan said he was going to be 10 minutes late, and I said same.
Oh,
but
easy.
I'm not going to be 10 minutes late. Easy. I'm going to be a bit later because Gus has to go out and do his business.
Easy.
Just blame Gus.
Well, once again, boys, thank you very much. Thank you to all the listeners out there. This has been episode 150 of the Coffee Cup Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you guys all again next week. Bye.